Welcome to Phenomenal Woman. I'm your host, Janice Sutherland. Join me as we share the success strategies of phenomenal women achieving extraordinary success around the globe. From the good, the bad, the ugly, and everything in between, this is Real Talk by Real Women. We share with you the highs and lows of their journey and give you honest insight on how you can navigate same with confidence, integrity, and gain a little inspiration. As a leadership strategist, executive coach and business consultant, I have the pleasure of working with organisations and individuals, helping them to turn their goals into success. So hello everybody and welcome to this week's edition of Phenomenal Woman. And I am delighted to be joined by Lisa Abraham, aka the Racing Beautician. Now, everyone's going to be really intrigued as to how you got that title, Lisa. So can you tell us a little bit more about yourself, where and where you come from, and how you got that, how you, as the English would say, that moniker, how you got that name?
Well, as Janice said, my name is Lisa Abraham. I am the first of two children of my mother and father. My mother is Antiguan born from the village of Parham. My father is Dominican.
Okay.
I have one sibling, one younger sister, 4 years apart between us both. So at times I said, you know, I'm the first and I came alone. So I was expected to fight this battle of life by myself.
Yes.
Because it took me 4 years before I had company. I have been in the auto motorsports type world. I would say I was born into the world. Okay. As my father is a mechanic by profession.
Wow.
And I grew up with my dad being a mechanic, doing work at home. And he worked for Harney Motors in Antigua for some 20 odd years.
Right.
In the field of being a mechanic.
Okay.
So I was exposed to that from birth. Yes. And you'll hear stories from times before you can remember. And from the time I can remember, I was always outside helping, passing the tools, and I would be his little secretary to do the bills when he's done his jobs and all this sort of stuff. So I was born into that world,
right.
I would say. I went to foundation mixed school as primary. I did Clare Hall Secondary as my secondary education. And while it's Clare Hall Secondary, as you're going to secondary school, what do you want to be? Everybody remember me because Lisa was the girl that would always model. And
right.
She was a girl that always had on the swimsuits, and
okay.
She was daring, and she never backed down from anything, and yes. So you would find teachers that I don't even remember now would meet me out and say, "Is that Lisa Abraham?" And I'm like, maybe. People would say, if a teacher can remember both your first and last name,
yeah.
It obviously meant that you created some impact while
yes.
going to school.
Yes.
While going to Clare Hall Secondary School, I did the norm. Yes, the norm, the regular subjects. And then I repeated the third form, a set of us, because we had a new principal, and he just thought we were acting out too much, so we were going to suffer by paying another year in secondary school. And with my second year, I opted out of the girly subjects.
Right.
By girly, I mean, I stopped doing home ec, and I went over to do what the boys were doing. Woodwork, metalwork, technical
right.
drawing.
Right.
And I left craft and went and did art.
Okay.
So I guess that's where the artistic in me started coming out.
Right.
When I left Clare Hall School, I thought I would pursue a career in architecture. But at that time, my parents couldn't afford it. Architecture at that time was like $40,000 EC,
right.
like $15,000
yeah.
per semester. And right. they couldn't afford it, so I went to Goodwin's Commercial for 1 year, and then I went to Harney Motors, worked receptionist, then the managing director, secretary, and worked along in different areas within the company. And 5 years after being there, I thought maybe I should take on cosmetology, because I was always into the hair and the nails while I was going to school, even though I wasn't a girly girl.
Right.
I always liked my hair being proper and the nice hairstyles, and I always wore long fingernails. I had long
okay.
fingernails going to school that would curve. So
right.
I had that girly side of me. But
okay.
I still rode bicycles. I still played marbles. I still rode motorbikes with the boys. I was in the car world. So I was between both worlds, I guess, trying to find myself, so to speak. And after being at Harney Motors for 5 years, I decided to take a big plunge and resigned to go off and study cosmetology. And I went off to Dudley Cosmetology University in Kernersville, North Carolina.
Right.
And I studied cosmetology there for 9 months, the program was, but I was there approximately a year.
Okay, okay.
When I was done, the school had offered me to stay because I guess I was, I wouldn't say they called me, oh, Miss Perfectionist. Yeah. I always wanted to make sure I had it right.
Right.
My teachers would say, yes, Miss Perfectionist. I went into something I wasn't au fait with. And what I thought I would have learned and the direction the program would have gone, it wasn't going that way in my opinion.
Okay.
I just thought, what are we going to learn to do some hair? But we're going through all the theory and
the
history behind the profession and the chemical composition of the products and the chemical composition of the hair and all of these technical stuff. And you just want to learn to do some hair.
Right.
And you're just not seeing that coming. And so you're saying, so what pay all this money for and all the rest of it. And it was my money that I worked and saved to fund my way through cosmetology school. So because of that, I had the option that other students didn't have. I got to do advanced level courses before I was even finished with my basic school training.
Right.
Because they saw, I guess, the passion in me. And I was always pushing forward. All of my exams, I would get 190 plus. I was always up in the top tiers.
Okay.
So they allowed me, and I always complained about where I came from, the dollar value difference. It was 3 to 1 as I was in the US.
Yeah.
And said, I needed to get as much as possible while I'm here. So because of that, they did a lot of things to accommodate for me. And for that, I'm eternally grateful.
Right.
Because I came out not only knowing how to do hair, I got to do makeup artistry while I was there. I got to do the fundamentals of aesthetics. And I had an opportunity to do several advanced level courses during my year stint while I was there. When I returned home, I opted to work in a salon that was situated in Woods at the time. And the first day I was supposed to start, they closed.
Right. Okay.
So that never happened. And then there was another salon, Trendsetter. At the time, it was a set of salon professionals working in one space. It was an investment by somebody completely outside of the business, but she saw that these ladies wanted an opportunity and she decided to invest in it for them. Miss Bernadette Sherman. And it was a lot of salon professionals working, and I was the rookie, so to speak.
Okay.
I was coming in. People knew me from the corporate world, from the car world, the motorbike world, Carnival Queen world. Nobody knew anything about me being able to do any hair or anything of the sort. So to get people to trust you was a completely new aspect that I didn't even consider. It wasn't even something that I knew I thought I would have had to do to convince people that I was able to. I had a world of certificates saying I was certified too.
Yeah.
But in these parts of the world, certificates don't really mean much. People want to you to show them that you can get the job done.
Yeah, you need the proof.
That's right. I ended up assisting everybody in the salon, assisting to help you wash out, starts. And I only had few sole jobs. So at the end of the week, my pay was so small. I was saying, it's costing me more to go to work than what I'm making. So why am I doing this? I then opted to start searching for employment in the corporate world again. I said, maybe this is not where I'm supposed to go.
Right.
And I shifted directions again. I first had a job at Botours doing the hospitality business, meeting the guests at the airport, meeting them at the hotels, letting them know what's going on in the country, doing tours. After that, I had requested for a job at Colombian Emeralds. I went there for 1 day. And I had also applied at Antigua Commercial Bank. And they called me in for an interview and I landed the job at ACB. So I started back at ACB the 1st of December 2000. And I worked there for 5 years, thereabout, until 2006. And I said, this is not for me. This 8 to 4, 7:45 to 4 is not for me. I felt bored.
Right.
I wanted more. I would be the floater at ACB.
Yeah.
Because I was hired as a customer service rep. But there are times I would be receptionist, I'd be upstairs in the fax room. Anywhere they needed help, yeah, I would always volunteer.
Yeah.
Because I get bored easily. And I just always wanted to be doing something fresh, something new. And after 5 years at ACB, I was doing my hair at Mingo's. And there were fellow colleagues in the cosmetology field, as the one of the owners and I both studied at DCU. And they said they had a room for aesthetics, but they didn't have anybody, if I knew anybody that would have been interested. Yeah. And I thought about it and I said, I wonder if, and I say, what's the worst that can happen? So I remortgaged my house.
Okay.
And I took a really big plunge.
Right.
I resigned from, I had vacation during, so yeah. I narrowed it down and I sent in my resignation so I didn't have to go back to work after after the vacation. Yeah. And I started out at Mingo's. So that is where I came back into the world of cosmetology.
Right.
And the manager for the bank, he also did his hair there, and he said, Lisa, I didn't know you could do all of this stuff. What were you doing with all this hidden talent? I said, I guess it just was not time yet for it to be released.
Yeah.
And from Mingo's, I stayed there just about 2004 to 2005, six, thereabout, a year and a half of stuff. And then we had a bit of falling out and I left.
Right.
And I started where I am located now.
Okay.
It was a storeroom. It was a shop my mom had back in the day, selling candies, confectionaries, that kind of thing. She did that wholesale.
Right.
As a second job.
Yeah.
And my dad had it as a storeroom. And one day I just called him and said, what are you doing with that room? He says, I just have stuff stored in there. He said, what's up? I say, I think I'd like to do something for myself.
Right.
He says, when do you want to do this? I say, like yesterday. He says, consider it done. And he cleared the room out and I transformed it.
Right.
When I started first, I only started doing aesthetics, just manicures, pedicures, facial, waxing, and makeup.
Right.
And a year later, I expanded to do everything here because the aesthetics, you can consider it a luxury service in that you weren't getting a vast clientele on a regular basis to sustain in the aesthetics.
Yeah.
Like here would then provide that more frequent business, more frequent customers.
Yeah. Right.
And I went off into the hair side of it.
Okay.
And I've been here 12 years since.
Okay. And the name of your business?
House of Pamper.
Excellent, excellent, excellent. Right. So where does the racing come into it? So the beautician side you've covered off really well. So how the racing, and I know you said you worked with your dad and stuff like that, but you actually race.
I actually do.
Okay, so tell us a little bit more about your racing.
Right. In my years of working at Harney Motors, the guys would race illegally on the streets here, and I was always a part of that because I always went wherever the guys were going.
Right.
Whatever the guys were doing, I was right in that world. And we would go to race after work on some days and in the evenings, and we would meet up at Robinson service station, and if an argument got heated, we were going to battle it out racing.
Right.
And that is where I started in the racing world, on the streets illegally, running from the police. All of this jazz, I was in that male world.
Right.
I got into the riding of the motorbikes because I also liked the bikes until I had my first fall. And I say, these patches, Lord knows. I don't know how these guys do this on a regular basis.
Yeah.
Break up all their bones, bruise up all their skin, and they continue. That for me was an eye-opener.
Right.
Because it was a little scooter. And I fell and I got some real bruises, no broken parts, but real bruises, and they hurt for a very long time.
Yeah.
So I said, this bike thing is only going to be joyriding, no racing, two wheels. And my dad, he was always for the cars, no problem.
Yeah.
He said, the motorbikes, they're short of parts. He says, they're short of two extra wheels. They're short of body. part of a rope. Yeah, yeah. He was it for the motorbike. So I had a struggle there. So my motorbike was really undercover.
Right.
Outside of my parents knowing. And while working at Harney Motors, and I bought my first car, that is when I really got into the racing. It wasn't a race car at all. It was a regular sedan.
Right.
But everybody at work had one of these little Toyota Corollas, the reconditioned ones.
Right.
And we would all, on a Friday, we would have competition between ourselves. Closer to the end of the workday, Mr. Harney would allow us to do our little tune-ups. And then we would go to Crabs and compete against each other, just for fun, not for any prizes or anything, right, just for fun amongst ourselves.
It's like the Antiguan Fast and Furious. And from there,
that's right. Similar to that. And from there, the interest in the sport grew, and I just kept going in it. I kept going in it. And I bought a sports car. And when did I buy that car? I'm not good with years and numbers, but I bought a Toyota 11.
Right.
It was two-door. And 11 was a thing that the guys were racing, so I got into the racing. So with the implementation of John I, 4th and 5th, I was there in my 11 doing races. I had another friend that would allow me to drive his car, so I got to drive the MR2s and the Mitsubishi Evos, and those are the cars with the real power.
Right, right.
And I had an opportunity to race within those cars. Then I dated a guy that was in the world of racing and had a race car. And he was always putting the gears, as the guy would say, oh, you know, I drive good, you put the gears. Get a girl when driving, man. Make her see how she go on. And he was from the Honda world. And I grew up always Toyota, everything within the Toyota brand. Toyota's, Mitsubishi, what Harney Motors sold, as that was where, that was like family.
Yeah.
My dad was there. I went there. So that was like your family. So you gravitated within the brands, within the family.
Yes.
And that was a Honda. And it was my first time ever driving a Honda, ever racing a Honda. And all of the gears connected from first to fifth, right through the quarter mile. And the guys say, I bet you make the girl drive. You put all the gear down, the girl gets in the gear, best you make she drive. And he says, well, if you can continue to drive like this, I'll let you drive.
Right.
And I went off. They say, she didn't even drop out of VTEC. I'm like, what is VTEC? I didn't know anything about what they were talking, but I was in that world. Toyotas didn't have VTEC at the time. So that was new technology for me, new jargons that I had no knowledge of.
Yeah.
And I started racing. I raced my first Caribbean championship representing Antigua as the only female here in 2004, I think it was. I did not win, but I reached to the semifinals.
Right.
Driving the same car. And in my final race, a mishap caused my loss, and he behaved really bad. And I said, you know what? After today, the next time I will drive a race car is when I can afford to own one.
Right.
I don't want anybody showing off on me. Yeah. I can't do this anymore. And I left his car, and the next time I raced was when I bought my Honda Integra. A similar car to his.
Yeah.
Similar, exact, people would say the exact same car, but I would say similar. She's called Misbehaving.
Right.
And I bought her 3 years ago.
Okay.
And I started my first race with her. I tested her in Antigua, but my first competition with her was in Nevis.
Right.
I put her on a boat. I went to Nevis. At that time, we only had John I, 4th and 5th. Not Sound was not in existence yet. Yeah. And other members from Antigua were racing in Nevis at the time, so I decided to join them with the car. And that event, we had some hiccups. I did reasonably well, but I did not place. And after I became the president of the Drag Racing Association here, went to the government, presented a proposal for the development of the sport in Antigua and Barbuda, and to plea for a national home so that we could have somewhere that all and sundry can participate, because John I, 4th and 5th was privately owned, but the man that created it, he passed away unfortunately, and his son inherited it, and he was not with the same vision. So he had a lot of hiccups, and the track was deteriorating. Fortunately for us, the government accepted the proposal, and then we had the introduction of North Sound International Raceway.
Fantastic.
With the introduction of North Sound, being the president of the association, I was playing double roles. Being the leader of the organization, getting the track to some level of professional outfit so that we could be in comparison with other tracks in the Caribbean and then by extension the world.
Right.
But I still had my car and I still wanted to race, and I did still race.
Okay.
With a lot of, let me see the proper word I should use, a lot of naysaying.
Yeah.
Because I was hearing, oh, you're the one that's organizing the events and you're the president, why are you still racing? I said, well, if I'm to choose, I would prefer to drive my car than to run the association. So if I'll be forced to choose, somebody else can take up the mantle of leadership. I think I've done my part, and I will walk away if I'm ever forced to choose.
Yeah.
Because the sport, as it stands, the people that are within the administrative role in the sport, other people in the sport.
Right.
Ultimately, we weren't and still are not in a position where we can employ people and pay them a salary to do these roles. So for us in the sport, we have to volunteer to get it up to a level that we can get to a point where we can bring in a professional team and pay them, because the track is making money and the organization has some fundings that we can afford to pay a professional management team to manage the facility. So in the interim, we just have to make it work.
Yeah. So you're in a very male-dominated environment,
And
as you said, the naysayers are not just about your driving. It's just about, it's probably about a woman being in the sport, period.
That's right.
How do you maintain your confidence, your assertiveness? Because I can imagine there's all kinds of, a strong woman isn't usually very welcomed in a male-dominated environment. They don't know how to handle, should I say, a strong woman. So how do you deal with those kind of scenarios?
How do I deal with those scenarios? One, for me, you know what makes me phenomenal, Janice? I'm confident.
Excellent.
I'm confident in me. I'm confident in what I do. And whatever I do, I put my best at it.
Right.
And the naysayers... Yes, the naysayers get to me at times, and to say that they don't would be a big lie.
Right.
Yes, they get to me because I'm human, and yes, they will get to me. But on the outside, I am one tough cookie. One tough girl. You know that I am fond of two of your nice words.
Yeah.
Being called a badass.
Yeah.
And in more wider term, being called a bitch.
Yeah.
I've been called a bitch in so many forms now. Anybody calls me bitch, I consider it a compliment.
Own it.
That's right. And I have had so much struggle.
Yeah.
Because I am a woman, one, and because I don't bow to pressure.
Right.
And I am bold, and I am fierce, and I am fearless, to say the least.
Excellent.
Whatever they throw at me, I just own it.
Yeah.
Say, oh, you know, she thinks she this and she think. I say, I don't think, I know.
Yeah.
And that for them is like one of the biggest deterrent. Because for men, what they would hope is that every time they say something negative to a woman, that you bow under pressure, that you bow down, hold your head down, not look up, not own it. And every time you own it, you know what? It gives them a sense of, what next can I do to break this bitch?
Yeah.
That's them. They think of everything they can do to put you under their feet and to break you down. And in hindsight, if they were to embrace a woman being in their world, giving her invaluable contribution equally as them, and not in no way letting them feel belittled or putting them beneath you.
Yes.
The industry would grow so much faster. The world would be so much of a better place if we could all embrace each other. Let's not look at each other as competition. We need to coexist.
Yes.
From the Bible days, God created man first. And he decided man needed companion. He didn't make another man as companion. He made woman. And he made woman for a reason.
Yeah.
And if we are saying that we're spiritual, and we believe in God. And every day something happens to us, we say, oh God, we call him his name in vain, but by right, we're calling his name so that we're reaching out to him in hindsight for assistance.
Yeah.
Let us look at what he has created and let's see how best we can make what he has created work so that the world can be a better place.
Yeah.
Because if it is that both men and women equally can embrace each other, embrace each other's talent, each other's skill, the world would be such a badass place.
Definitely.
We often hear them say, behind every successful man is a woman. But I beg to differ. I say, beside every successful man is a woman.
Yeah.
We should be beside, not behind.
Yeah.
And that has been the struggle of women for years, I would say.
Yes.
We have all been comfortable being in the shadow.
Yes.
We have all been comfortable letting the man take the lead role. Let him be the face. And we stay in the background and do all the work. For a lot of men and women duo companies, you would see, if there's a split, you start to see the business falling. Especially
right.
if the man owns the business and the woman is the one that decides to just take a clear break. You want it? Take it. Just leave it with him and take a clear break. We start seeing it fall down. And why is that so? Because the backbone of it has gone, as people would say.
Yeah.
But I would always say the backbone. I say the side, the equal partner in the business is not there anymore. And where's the objective thinker? We hear them say in the beauty industry, why it is dominated by male. It is because of their way of thinking.
Yes.
But if they were to think slightly different or have an objective view in what they're doing, the industry could be such a more vibrant industry. Such a greater industry. We're now seeing all sorts of healthcare concern with products and so on because the men are only concerned about bottom line.
Right.
But give a woman a little bligh, as we would say in the Caribbean, to be beside you and give some insight as to what is going on. It may affect your bottom line, but at the end of the day, you would have a safer product, a better product, more sustainable product and industry. And at the end of the day, you will make more.
Yeah, yeah.
As opposed to doing something and then a product takes a hit, some chemical in it is causing cancer, and then your whole business suffers because you didn't look at it objectively.
You talked about that. But sometimes your confidence can, you know, you can hurt something. So how do you in those situations? How do you bounce back? How do you make, you know? And we all know there's a facade, you know, because we, you know,
right.
We don't show weakness. We're not showing the weakness, but it hurts.
That's right.
But how do you bounce back from those situations? How do you deal with it?
How do I bounce back from these situations? More than anything else, Janice, I pray.
Right.
I pray. I was president of the Drag Racing Association from 2013. And when I became president, the same night they voted for me, after the meeting, you know what I heard them saying? Look how we see she do this now. Because plenty done tried before she. People with money, people with influence.
Yeah.
A lot of people have tried to do what she thinks she can do. And let us see her do it.
Yeah.
And you know how I felt then? I felt like I was set up to fail.
Right.
Honestly, that's how I felt. That night I went home and said, so many people, the people with influence, so to speak, the people with the money,
yeah.
All of these people are the people that called me and said, everybody is coming out to vote for you tonight. Do not turn down the nomination and accept it. And whatever it is that we can do to make sure it works, we will assist you. And these were the same players that they were referring to. Players with the money, players with the influence, and all the rest of it. And when I prepared the presentation and we went, it was considered favorably. It was an election year, and the populace was saying, oh, government, only a promise. But to hear from the inside of the organization that they also felt that it was just going to be a lame promise and we weren't going to get anywhere. But for the first time in 10 years, we at least got a promise.
Right.
And nobody saw that as we made ground, that we were going somewhere.
Yeah.
When you saw people from the inside, and I can't say nobody, but a lot of them thought, oh, make how we see she do this. And at the time, elections are always sketchy. We don't know where it would go. But from our first cabinet meeting with the former government, we had the incumbent approaching, wanting to see what we had presented, because they had something in their manifesto as well with regards to motorsports and sports in general.
Right.
And I just said respectfully, guys, this is not anything about politics. This is something that can assist our economy. This is something that can aid the country. And we're not playing politics, so we're not going side by side. Mm-hmm. If it is you become the government, I will share what I presented with you.
Yeah.
And it so happened that they did become the government. And thankfully, I must say that their manifesto promise, they did live up to. Because what was presented, they decided that they were going to make it happen.
Excellent.
And if for the first time we could say government was continuous in Antigua and Barbuda, I can attest to that. Continuous, and I must say that they have made a considerable investment to the sport, and they continue to make an investment. And I say that is really good, that we've had a shift. Maybe it is just younger minds, people thinking out of the box, people seeing far more than what we were offering that we right. needed to do.
Right.
And it works for the sport. However, 3 years in, and my body decides it's time for me to go. 3 years in, and they think, I have been making so much strides and so much has been going on, and the ministers are having my name on the tip of their tongues, and when they're making presentation, they're referring to me. So now Lisa has become a force to be reckoned with, and they want me out because they want the spotlight.
Right.
I said, okay. And one meeting, they said, why don't you just resign if you're not going to do what we want? And I found it so funny that they elected me to hold this position like if I had no brain. I was supposed to be the face, but yeah. I was supposed to do what they wanted.
Right.
But they needed a pretty face. They needed a female face to go out and face the populace because they thought the males weren't getting through.
Yeah.
Let us use a woman. And yeah. use, I do not use loosely. I mean it as the word says. Use a woman
yeah.
to get where we needed to go.
Yeah.
And from they thought they reached there, they thought they used the woman enough. So it's time for us to push her away. And Janice, I fought back. I said, you don't want me anymore? Vote me out.
Right.
And I forced. But then I planned the awards, the second year of us doing the awards. The first year was a success. I had all the dirty guys that people would see around clean themselves up, bought suits,
right.
red carpet.
Yeah.
And for the first time ever in Antigua, we had the drag racing awards. And it was well received. But the second year, they so were against me. You know what they did? They decided they were going to boycott the awards. They knew all the ministers, the sponsors, all of the top officials and so on would be at the awards because they were invited, as the year before they were. And they decided they were going to stick it to me. I knew that they were going to boycott the awards, and I didn't back down. I went ahead.
Yeah.
I said, well, let's see. I said, let's see who is bolder. I'm going to show y'all I ain't bowing under no pressure. And I'm going to show y'all what I'm really made of.
Yeah.
I thought about it. I prayed about it. And I said, you know what? If it is that they do boycott the awards, I will walk. That would be enough of an indication for me that they really don't want me anymore.
Right, right.
And the week leading up to the awards, members of my executive started calling one by one. If you don't see me on Thursday, don't take it personal. I just can't deal with all that's going on. I reached out in our executive group and said, guys, do you think we should just cancel the awards as to all sorts of talk-ins are going on? They said, no, we're going ahead. We're going ahead. And they started trickling down one by one that Lisa may not make it on Thursday. I may not make it on Thursday.
Yes, right.
I just said, okay. And I went ahead, Janice. And on that night, I just planned for them. Just like they were planning for me, I planned for them without any indication.
Right.
And on the night of the awards, I just tendered my resignation to the awards. I had my sister at home waiting for me to send a message, for her to send my email to the Drag Racing Association, to the Minister of Sports, and to the Ministry of Sports, that I have walked away.
Yeah.
And I did it. And everybody reached out from the top officials right down the ladder. And I just told them straight up, the guys have shown their position. and the Drag Racing Association is not mine. I know it isn't. I was elected to serve. I've served to my best. They want it. Let them have it. I have no problem walking away.
Right.
And I walked away. And I have no regrets.
Yeah.
I'm still in the world. I'm still operating in the world. I'm still functioning in the world. And I'm still doing what I love in the world.
Excellent.
I am planning events. I'm promoting events. I'm still driving my car without any objections. And I prefer it on the outside.
Excellent.
I think it works better on the outside. I have a lot more time. My business gets a lot of attention. Me of myself have had the opportunity to grow more because I don't have that headache to deal with it.
Right, right. So Lisa, share with us a success quote or mantra that you use and why it's meaningful for you.
I have so many. So many. But one that would definitely come to mind is Maya Angelou.
Right.
She says, if you always try to be ordinary, how would people know how extraordinary you could be?
Yeah.
And I don't ever want to, for years, I have lived in the shadow of not caring to be in the spotlight. And for whatever reason, whatever I do, I always end up in the spotlight. For whatever reason, negatively or positively, I end up in the spotlight. And whether negative or positive, I think it has been to my advantage.
Right.
Now, I do me.
Yeah.
Any opportunity I am availed, as long as it comes my way and it is doable, I believe in faith. And I said, this is the way the Lord is directing me. And wherever he leads, I have promised to follow.
So Lisa, let's go back a few years.
Sure.
What advice would you give your teenage self?
What advice would I give my teenage self?
Yes.
My teenage self, I would say, any opportunity that you are given, take Richard Branson's quote. If ever you're offered an amazing opportunity, just say yes and figure out how you get it done after.
Yeah.
For sure, sure, sure. Because I have had so many opportunities that I've just said, okay. And half of the times, I have no knowledge, I have no insights, I don't know how in the world I'm going to, and I just say yes, and I figure my way out, and thus far, it has been working.
Excellent.
And I say, if it ain't broke, why fix it?
Definitely, definitely agree with you on that. And if you could choose your own mentor, who would it be and why?
Many. I can't say one.
Okay.
And I will do a few and I will tell you why.
Okay.
One, for looking at somebody internationally, I would say Oprah Winfrey.
Every time.
Living Oprah Winfrey. Oprah Winfrey has done some remarkable things in her life, and she has been selfless. She has shared so much, and she continues to share. And for that, I say, being a Black woman and looking from a Black woman myself,
coming
from a family not with any excessive wealth, not with any handouts. Yes, I've had opportunities that my parents have afforded me, but not $1 million handout to say, there is money, go do it. I carried myself through school because my parents had their obligations, and I understood. My sister did the same thing. So when I look at Oprah Winfrey's story, I'm inspired by her.
Yeah.
I'm also inspired by Michelle Obama.
Yes.
See that this woman could give up her six-figure salary job to stand beside her husband to take on the role of being the first Black president of the United States of America.
Yeah.
And she says, she loves her husband.
Yeah.
She believed in what he was going to do. And she took a casualty for him. And of course, I respect Michelle Obama for doing that. Because not many of us would be able to really say, do I give up me and let him shine?
Yeah.
Really? So that
But I, sure. But I don't think she gave up herself. I think she...
No, she didn't.
She pivoted out of a
dead
career. And
that's right.
And created, I won't say a new persona, but she created a new role for... She created a role that was befitting for her.
That's right.
You know, so I do...
That's right.
Yes.
And for her as well, to see that she went into the White House and she made a change as the first Black First Lady.
Yeah.
So that, I think, is also inspiring. As I said, of a lady past, Madam C.J. Walker, the inventor of what we call Creamy Crack, the relaxer.
Yeah.
Also, Maya Angelou, one of my other mentors I would look at as being two women that have passed on. Male, internationally, Steve Harvey.
Okay. Why Steve?
Steve Harvey.
Come, Steve.
Yes.
Tell me, Steve.
Right. Steve Harvey, I watch his show. I follow his success. I've done his success workshops. And for lots of reasons, I like him. I like also that he came from nowhere to somewhere.
Yeah,
and he is also very open to sharing his journey and very open to helping. Mm-hmm. Richard Branson as well. He is also another man that you can look at with a success story that came from nowhere.
Yes.
And he has also given back a lot, contributed a lot, continue to help and continue to aid in other successes.
Yeah.
Locally, within Antigua and Barbuda, I'm going to start with the woman that I'm now speaking with. And I'm going to tell you why I will start with Janice Sutherland. When I hear her story and to see that the struggles that she has faced to getting to the top of her game, to the top as CEO of a mega telecommunication company within the region, she has done similar to what I have done. She stood her grounds. She stuck up to the challenge. She ran her course, and when she did it, she said, all right, I did it. It's time for me to do me.
Yes.
Janice Sutherland.
Thank you.
Mitzi Allen, another one of my mentors. Mitzi Allen and I have been in each other's lives for over half of my life. And in recent times, we've just been doing some backtracking. And she came into my life just with her doing a stint at her employees. And I decided to join that. Back then, it was Cable and Wireless. Right. And they were doing scouting for talent. And I thought I had talent. And I was going to dance and the rest of it. And we connected since then. And we have kept that connection to date. And she's somebody that I call and reach out to every time I need help. And she's always there. She and her husband both, they have included me in several of their projects and have given me also some remarkable opportunities. Locally as well, I would say, or within our region,
yeah,
I would say Nerissa Golden. And Nerissa Golden for, I was a part of the WINC workshop.
Right.
And in doing the WINC workshop, she said, when we were sharing different of our stories and experiences, and I said, House of Pamper cannot fail. And she said, why can't House of Pamper fail, Lisa? I said, because that's my baby, and it can't fail. Yeah. And I make up my mind to just force it to the end, and I'm going to fight to keep it alive. And she says, Lisa, sometimes we have to be objective. And sometimes when we have outlived certain things, we have to move on to the next. And that opened up my eyes like you would not imagine. And that caused the rebirth of Lisa Abraham, the rebirth of Lisa Lise, the formation of the Racing Beautician. And just somebody looking at you and saying to you, look at other possibilities in your life.
Yes.
This may not be the only thing that you can do. You are doing so many other things.
Yeah.
Look and see how else you can become great in your space.
Yes.
Another person I look at is a lady I met at a workshop, and she inspired me to be able to look at being a public speaker.
Right.
In Dion Chamberlain. I saw this woman present in Trinidad at a Caribbean Expo workshop.
Right.
And everything in her just spoke to me. Everything she did just spoke to me. She just connected with me, connected with my inner spirit. She just connected. And we have been friends on Facebook. I've been following her journey. And I've been just watching what she has been doing. And there are several others, but those is who I would put in front.
Excellent.
As people that I don't want to be like anybody, Janice.
Yeah.
There's nobody I see I want to be like. But there are so many people with so many inspiring stories, so many inspiring testimonies, so many inspirations on their journey. And I believe in learning from other people, learning from their mistakes, learning from what they have done. Because I say, why reinvent the wheel? Exactly. Somebody has done it before.
Yes.
Somebody has done it before. In the third world, I find that we are so timid and so very holding of our successes. We don't want to share our stories. Yeah. We don't want to tell people what we have done and the challenges we have faced and to where we are today.
We have
so many people within these spaces that have gained financial wealth, have gained personal growth and development. And they're so timid in sharing their stories. And why? Why, if it is your success, why can't you share it? We look in North America. That's why I like to travel. I like going outside because you see so many different perspectives. You see everything from a different standpoint, a different angle. And you realize if you hold your greatness, nobody will ever know that you're great.
Very much.
My position as president of the Drag Racing Association made me famous, I would say. But maybe I always was, but I held it within so much and was so timid and didn't want to share and thought maybe people could think she enough and all the rest of it, thinking about the people instead of thinking about myself.
Yeah.
So now I think Lisa Lee's first.
Excellent.
I think me first, I love me first, I do me first, and everybody else fall after. I put God first in my life, and I do me first.
Excellent.
Everybody else that comes, wherever the buck falls, let them take their respective positions.
Excellent.
But if you don't do you first, you will lose you.
Yes, yes, very much, very much, very much. Now, we're winding up, Lee. We're winding up our questions, Lisa. So, my quick fire round. What are the three things you've learned about yourself during your career?
Three things I've learned about myself. I am very cautious where finances are concerned.
Yeah.
I am a go-getter.
Yes.
And I am a perfectionist, ultimately.
Excellent. And what would you say are your imperfections and how do you embrace them?
My imperfections, one biggest imperfections, I have a hard time saying no.
Okay.
Two, I am still to understand my worth.
Right.
And by understanding my worth, being able to comfortably and confidently say to someone, if they call me, there is a charge.
Yes.
I'm a professional and for you to consult with me, there is a charge.
Yeah. It's a thing women, I think a lot of women struggle with. It's a thing a lot of women struggle with.
Right. And thirdly, I would say that I am too cautious.
Right.
Too cautious in, you know, a man would just say, I have this plan. I'm going to the bank. I could just get this money. If they give me the money, I could figure out how the rest of it work. Me or I look at this plan so many times and I think of all the things that can go wrong.
Yeah.
Before I just say, let me just do it
and see where the buck falls. Stop being risk averse. I did a piece on that. But that's not just with a bit. I mean, that happens across the line because they say that a man will look at a role and he'll look at the qualifications and he may only have 60% of the qualifications, but he'll go for it. A woman will look at the same role and she'll say, she may have 90%, but she says, I can't go for it because I don't have 100%.
Right.
And
that's right.
And that's the difference. So I think we as women can, I mean, dare I say, take a little bit of learning from that.
That's right.
And just work it out as we go. We don't have to be perfect, because if we wait to be perfect, we'll never get started.
Agreed.
So Lisa, what's your definition of success?
My definition, I always, when people ask me that question, I said, is there such a word as success? Because success can be taken in so many folds. Mm-hmm. For me, being successful is doing me and doing what I love and enjoying doing it.
Okay.
That's how I would term my success.
Excellent.
Doing me, doing the things I love and enjoy doing it while doing it.
Fantastic.
If I get paid, even better.
So if that one stumped you, this last one is, what does it mean to you to be your own hero?
What does it mean to me to be my own hero? Now I have gotten to the point of embracing being my own hero, because in recent times, politics have been pushed in my face from so many angles. My dad now refers to me as his politician daughter. And although it may be not something far-fetched, I am still to the point of opening up to it.
Right.
And one of my mentors have recently said to me, we have 5 years to start grooming. So the process, let the process begin. Being my own hero is that I have created such an impact within Antigua and Barbuda, within the region, and within the world. I think my story alone is a true testament to me being a success.
Fantastic. That was my last question. So take you out of the hot seat there. So if people want to get in touch with you or follow you, Lisa, how can they do that?
You can follow me. I am on Facebook and Instagram. Personally, on Facebook and Instagram at I Am Lisa Lise. The brand page is The Racing Beautician, at The Racing Beautician, both on Facebook and Instagram.
Excellent.
The Racing Beautician, we also have a YouTube channel that you can subscribe to. If you'd like to reach out to me via email, you can email me at theracingbeautician@gmail.com. Via telephone, it's 268-772-4663.
Fantastic. So, Lisa, thank you so much for your time this morning. It's been very illuminating.
Thank you very much for having me, Janice.
You're welcome.
I am indeed happy to see that phenomenal woman are taking the lead role to tell our stories.
Definitely.
So that other phenomenal women can understand and realize that they are also phenomenal.
Excellent. Definitely. So that was Lisa Lee, the very determined racing beautician who has made great strides in breaking what is seen to be a very male-dominated environment of car racing. So kudos to you, Lisa. Now, I took away some really interesting points from that interview, such as, you know, never feel you're less of a person just because you're a woman. The fact that if you put your mind to it, we can actually achieve anything because we are phenomenal. And I also saw that, you know, we can't wait for things to happen. We have to make it happen, especially when it came to her education. She understood that her backgrounds weren't the most salubrious or the best starting. So she didn't go, woe is me, sit down, how I'm going to do this, who's going to pay it for me. She got off her backside and she earned the money to go and do it, to go and live her vision. So, you know, so it's not waiting to be rescued, because if you are waiting for someone to come and bring you the solution, bring you the answers, bring you the antidote, then you're going to be waiting an awful long time. And as women, we really have to be in charge of what our own destiny is. So if you sometimes have self-talk that you can't do this without, or why won't someone help me? That's a sign that you're probably waiting to be rescued. If you think someone's going to come along and solve all your problems, whether that's financial, emotional, physical,
If you keep trying to play the lotto, scratching the card, thinking like my numbers will come up, if you keep thinking that if I work really hard, my boss will see that I'm doing and he'll give me the dream job and the promotion. And sometimes, you know, I need to get it together, but it feels like too much effort and I just don't know where to start. I'm not going to do anything. Those are all signs that you may be prepared to hand over your personal power and your responsibility of your life to someone else and let them take control. So when we get caught up in these situations, we end up blaming people for our own action, but we have to be the one that's in charge of what we're doing. And as I said, if we are going to be waiting for someone to come along and fix what we perceive as a problem, let's understand, no one's coming to save us but ourselves. So that was some really good, really good insight I saw from that. And I'm sure you saw a lot more. Well, as ever, it's always a delight to have you listen to the interviews and participate. Please keep sharing, reviewing, subscribing, commenting. I love, love, love to hear the feedback that you give me every time. Please feel free to drop me a line in the Fearless Phenomenal Women Facebook group. And as I said, keep subscribing, sharing, commenting. So until next week, be bold, be fearless, be phenomenal, and be you.